Maker, miniaturist, and prop designer. That's how Chelsea Anderson describes herself in a nutshell. But after watching season 3 of Making It on NBC, Chelsea showed herself to be that and much more. Before landing the show of her dreams, Chelsea worked as a full-time landscape architect in the Bay Area for 7 years. Over that time she practiced as a landscape architect, she was also building her miniature brand, Chelsea Makes. Not miniature as in the scale of her small business, but quite literally she was making miniatures. She created beautifully crafted dollhouses, teeny scaled furniture, and the cutest all around the world sets for her hamster, Martin. While she found a career that she loved, she came to realize that her true passion was making miniatures. After landing a season 3 spot on Making It, her dreams quickly became reality. She created bright and deeply meaningful crafts with the best crafters around, and of course, the hosts of the show, Amy Poehler and Nick Offerman from Parks and Rec. She even got so far as to make runner-up for the Master Maker. Although she currently doesn't pursue landscape architecture as a profession, it's safe to say that it was a helpful gateway to help her pursue her true passion. If you followed the Greenside podcast, then you know we started the season with a series called Unpaved. I interview people who started in landscape architecture and pursued an unpaved path from it, or vice versa. Chelsea is the perfect example of taking the unpaved path. I have to say, as I was watching the show, there was an obvious connection with her being a landscape architect. But I really felt that without ever meeting her, she was a kindred spirit. And of course, during my interview, I felt like I was talking to a friend. I know I say this a lot, but I think this is my favorite interview. Now, on to my not-so-mini interview with Chelsea Anderson. Hey, tree huggers, we're back with a very, very, very special guest, and I'm not going to introduce her because I'm not worthy, and I'm going to allow her to introduce herself. She is super cool. So, Chelsea, welcome to the Greenside.
Thank you so much for having me, and you're more than worthy. I'm just your normal person. I'm Chelsea. I'm Chelsea Anderson. I'm also known as Chelsea Makes. I am a full-time miniaturist, which I got into as a career after being a licensed landscape architect for 7 years. Wow. And a lot of people know me most commonly from the show NBC's Making It, which is a crafting competition show hosted by Amy Poehler and Nick Offerman from the one and only Parks and Recreation.
Oh my gosh. I mean, just the words. That's crazy. Did you ever watch Parks and Rec like before you?
Oh yeah. I think it is like you have to watch it if you're in the public realm. Like if you work in landscape architecture, if you work in parks, like it is scary how accurate it is.
Yeah.
Those town meetings, especially. Yeah.
Those town meetings though. Yeah. I honestly have heard that before. And like, it's just so funny that even too, like one of the episodes had an architect design one of the parks. I can't remember. And I was like, how dare they have an architect?
I know. It's like all of these parks, and there was no like landscape architect on the show, or maybe there was one. He was like only there for a season. So
come on now.
They really didn't. They didn't do their research. I really got to write them a letter.
Disappointed.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, well, it's so good to have you. And when I was watching the show Making It, of course it's not every day that you get to see a landscape architect doing something. So like you're in crafting, you're doing beautiful, gorgeous little designs. And I'm just kind of like, wait, this is not every day that like you get to see a landscape architect do something like this. And because you normally like, they're always within the industry or they're always doing something. Right. You're doing something out of the box, you know, and that's amazing. So
yeah,
cool.
I mean, I think so few people even know what landscape architecture is that when you see it in a movie or on TV and you're like, oh my gosh, my people. And it's kind of crazy because it really is such a small community. So I'm glad that there was definitely a few landscape architects that reached out. We're like, yes, like finally represented.
Gosh. Yes, that's exactly how it feels. I feel represented and successfully represented. Like it's just so neat. It's so neat to see that. And of course, like I freaked out on the couch. I was like, oh my gosh, she's the worst. And everybody's like, oh, are you okay? I'm like, no, I'm fine.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's so cool. That really makes me, you know, because you go on a show like that, and I'm not someone who ever would have been like, I want to be on reality television. Like if it hadn't been for making it, it never would have been something that was like on my trajectory. But knowing that, that there are other people who can relate to your story and like, you know, even now it's been a full year since it aired, but to hear people still kind of connecting to the stories you share, makes it definitely worthwhile. So.
And what a cool thing to walk away with. Like the fact that you were able to even make an impact in that way, that non-landscape architects even, or anybody who's in any sort of sitting at a desk 9 to 5, you know, like, and they have a side craft that they love to do and they're not really sure if they should pursue it or not, or, you know, what they can do with it. But yeah, like you're the walking example of that, which is really neat. And I don't think, you know, I think that's why we're here. Why I asked you to be on the show is because like, it's not, you know, like not many students know that that's possible, you know?
Totally. And I don't think I would have known it was possible. I mean, I'm probably getting ahead of myself here, but you know, there's just like, you have to have a work-life balance. And even if you work in a creative profession, you're not always fulfilling the full pocket of creativity that you need as a creative person, because there's so many other things that tie into a professional career, licensure and, you know, getting through all the red tape and budgets. And so you need to have some sort of place to put all that extra creativity that you have when you leave your desk job.
That is as true as it gets. Honestly, I don't think anyone really prepares you for that in school. And like the way that it's sold to you is that it is uber creative and that it is very, and it is right. Very, it's yes. Great, but you know, it's at the same time, it's all very theoretical and, you know, so you don't really know all of the hoops you have to kind of jump in order to get
totally
to that point where you can do that. Which takes a lot of work and energy and time. But if you have it, cool, you know, but if you also want to be a miniaturist, that's cool too, you know.
It's all good. Any path is a good path as long as you're happy.
Right. Exactly. I love that. Yes. Well, I mean, the first thing I guess like I'm thinking of is that, I mean, I've obviously like we talk about the contrast between like landscape architecture and then like where you got to now, but I'm really, really curious. When did the maker like come out in you? Like when did it, you know, was it a person? Was it a circumstance? Was it a class? Like, was it a forest? I mean, I don't know. What was it?
Yeah, that's such a nice way for you to phrase that too. You know, I think I'm gonna take like a step back here and say that when I was in high school, like I had plans to go to art school. And I remember telling my guidance counselor, like, hey, I'm going to apply to this school. I want to be a photographer. And he laughed at me. And I was just like, that is such an inappropriate response to anyone's career choice. And, you know, this guy saw me once a year, if that. What did he know? You know, and I obviously changed guidance counselors, but it kind of got me shifted off the path of like, okay, like, yes, I want to do something creative, but I was never a risk taker. And I really wanted to find something that was kind of balanced out with a bit more of like a standard career trajectory.
Right.
And so I think there was always that kind of like creative side in me, but I was scared. I didn't want to be, you know, a starving artist, and I didn't want to be a quote unquote failure. And then when I found landscape architecture, landscape architecture, it's been a while since I've said those words.
It still happens to me and I say all the time.
Okay, great. That makes me feel a lot better. I mean, it just seemed like a really great balance because it was something that I could get an actual degree in. I had, you know, there was a clear career path. And then also it had this amazing combination of earth and the environment, which I'm a huge advocate for, and also of course design. So not to mention I went to school at SUNY ESF and I just loved the school. I just thought it was a great place. So when I first saw it, I was like, yeah, I'm definitely, this is my career, I'm set. And I think for like many years that was it was a great fit for me. And I think, you know, the first kind of inklings about maybe that I should be doing something else was back in college. We took our first laser cutting class, and I never even knew there was such a thing as a laser cutter. And the fact that it was suddenly so accessible to me when we were supposed to be there making a couple of site models, I ended up there like every other week trying to use this machine to see what I could make from it. And I think that really kind of kickstarted my just sort of obsession with making.
Wow. Wow. So you actually utilized the tools like right available to you. We had like a, what is it called? A makerspace as well. Yeah. And like, I think I resin printed a few times.
Awesome.
But I wish, like, I had resin printed like tiny little people one time for my model and like little tiny lampposts. I wish I had brought those so I could show you. I was like, look, I did something too. I'll send you a picture when I get home. Okay. Yeah. It was honestly like, yes. That's amazing though, that you utilize those tools to your advantage. I mean, would you say that that's what jump-started sort of this making miniature things? And
oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the whole idea of, you know, you just said it, making site models. I remember, you know, our program was a 5-year program, and there was nothing that excited me more than making a site model. And, you know, everyone else would get the assignment, and everyone else would kind of groan and be kind of like, oh, I don't want to have to do this. And I was just like, yes, site models. And of course, you know, you're probably experiencing this too now that you're working, but you know, site models are so not a part of everyday practice. Like they're such a great tool for thinking through things. I'm sorry, I have paint all over my hands.
That's great. That's amazing.
I tried to scrub it off before this call, but it's not budging.
I love it. No, show your hands. I'll show that you're a maker.
I did manage to get the paint off my face though.
You look great. You look great.
But yeah, I mean, you know, it's not part of everyday practice. And I think, you know, there's a lot of those big picture ideas that you get to play around with in school. I mean, sometimes you get to put those into work, but a lot of times, you know, you're doing more of like the cookie cutter things, especially when you're first starting out. There's a lot of CAD, there's a lot of parking lots and, you know, drive aisles. And there's something beautiful in even the mundane things like that. Like I became a huge like CAD fanatic, which was not something I ever would have guessed in school, but CAD and site models, that was my bread and butter.
Whoa. I didn't even think about that. I thought it would be like 3D modeling, you know, or something, but CAD.
Yeah. Wow. CAD. I don't know. There's something very nice and like methodical about it. You don't have to think too much. There's not, you know, once you get it right, there's not a lot of ways you can do it wrong. And I think when you're working in a profession where there's a lot of opinions, you have to deal with so many different people providing not only design input, but code input, all those things. It was nice to have like a quiet space in CAD to just kind of like click away.
Wow. I never thought about it that way. And I will from then on to the rest of my life because enjoy
those CAD moments, beautiful CAD moments.
It's so funny because now like when I go into Photoshop and I'll do like an illustrative or some, it's like anything, time escapes me completely because
that's perfect.
Okay.
That's what you
because
want.
Because that I feel that way about Photoshop. I feel that way about Photoshop.
See, that's great. And I think I think that that makes a lot of sense. It's like you're basically painting a beautiful picture and it's kind of, you know, so I think there's definitely tons of really creative things that are still fully embedded in landscape architecture. I think that my side hobbies just got a little too loud and I got pulled off track.
Oh man. Oh, I can't wait to get into those details. Okay. I was actually going to say though, when you mentioned your guidance counselor, you know, it's funny because I feel like there is this certain expectation in high school or even down to like middle school or elementary school, like you have to know what you want to do for the rest of your dang life. Your brain's not even much like developed fully. You know, and I'm like, I don't know what it takes, you know? So, I mean, it's insane though, that a person would respond that way to you. Who's looking for help, you know?
Yes. For guidance. For guidance. Goodness.
Like that's literally in your title. That's like on your desk.
I will never forget that man. And
that's,
but you know what? Like honestly,
now he regrets it. He regrets it.
I mean, he probably doesn't remember me or that happened, but I remember. I held it against him, but honestly, like I love that like landscape architecture is a part of my story. And I don't think that I would be who I am today and make the things I make today if I didn't follow the exact path that I followed. So it all worked out. That's I'm just still going to hold him accountable for making me feel bad.
Right. Of course. That part is the part that's, you know, that was unnecessary.
Inexcusable.
Yeah. But I was going to ask you too, like, looking back now, like, what would you say to somebody who is like, let's say you're a guidance counselor and somebody is like, hey, I'm looking to go to art school for photography. What would be your, now, like, looking back, looking at all that you've gone through and all the things that you've accomplished, what would be your advice to them?
Oh my gosh. I mean, for everything, for any career, like, you just have to go for it. I mean, you're experiencing this now, you know, you're fresh out of school, you're working full time. You don't know what you don't know. You don't know what this experience of being a landscape architect is going to be like, you know, even if you've been in classes about it, even if you've seen it done, until you experience it yourself. And so I think for anyone to say to someone else, like, you can't do that, that's not a career, that's not a job. Like, I'm someone who makes miniatures for a living. And when I tell people that, I'm like, there's no way this person believes me, and or they probably think I make like 5 pennies a year. So wow. If I can make a job wow. out of creating miniatures full time, then I feel like anyone can do anything. So right. it's all just about following what yeah. really excites you.
Yeah. And also, like, the amount of passion that you put into something and the amount of hard work that you put into it. I mean, all of it really kind of, I think people have the mentality where, like, you have the starving artist, because the artist is looking to have people come to them.
Right.
You know, like, they want to come to me for my work, but it's yes. like, you gotta establish something for yourself.
Hustle a little bit.
You gotta yes. hustle. Yeah, yeah. Because everyone loves art and everyone is never, you know, but I think at the same time, like, you have to work really hard to, yeah. To make it, you know, no pun yeah. intended.
Yeah. I mean, that's, we'll get into that in like a yeah. deep way, I'm sure, in a minute, but.
Oh,
I
for mean, sure.
To that point, you know, I think, like, there's so many, when I first was like, and now I'm kind of jumping all over, but when I was first even contemplating, you know, pursuing art full time, I was so worried that I was just not, that I was like, this is ridiculous. Like, this can't possibly be a job. I'm just going to fail. And at least I'll have something to fall back on. But, you know, the more passion you put into something, the more time you put into something, people will notice, people will see it. People will see that you care about what you're doing. And that is so attractive for so many reasons. I think, you know, I could read articles about 3D printing and laser cutting all day long. But when I sat in front of an article about things that were related to landscape architecture, it didn't spark in the same way. And I think, wow. you know, I wanted wow. to be good at my job, but I yeah. just, you know, if the passion isn't there, you're not going to be like the best at something if it's not what you actually care about.
I'm so glad that you said that, because I always thought, because sometimes I would say that to people, like, was it that you said that was, you have to, oh man, you said something and it was so good. And it was literally what I said, and it escaped me.
Oh, okay.
What did you say? You said, I forgot what it was.
We can always come back to it. If you
it
remember.
Was so good too. Dang it. And I, well, and I said it for what? Years.
This whole thing's recorded.
Yeah. Exactly. We'll go back and listen to that.
Exactly.
Oh, dang it. It was so good too. And I say it all the time to people, but yeah.
Oh,
I
just, is it you don't know what you don't know? Is that it?
It's connected to that. It's connected to that. You don't know what you don't know. And like, yeah, like, you don't know what you don't know, but you had, okay, I'll tell you the train of thought I had.
Okay. When yeah. You, bring it on.
Yeah. So really, like, you, where had always had a desire or a passion to make things, you know, all the time. It sounds like you've had that for a while, you know, to yeah. be an artist and things like that. So when you did landscape architecture, in a way, it was kind of like your door in, you know, to yeah. still do something that you didn't want to, like, bang your head against the screen every day, maybe.
Yes.
But at the same time, it wasn't something that you were totally in love with. So I see that all the time, is like, when something sparks joy, it almost seems like there comes a point when it becomes something you have to pursue, because
right.
you just, the door has in some way in your brain of, like, self-doubt or whatever, just kind of cracks a little bit. And then you can then start going for it. And I think that that alone is just, but you were smart about it. And I think that that's really good, is that you didn't try to find something to, like, accounting, you know, or maybe you love accounting, I don't right. know, but, yeah, or something that, all right, she doesn't love accounting. If, imagine if you had gone through accounting, that's stable. That's, you know,
right.
Like, right. But you didn't do that. Like, you found something
oh
that,
oh my gosh.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. That's true. I mean, like, I, it's not like I jumped ship right away and I was like, well, I'll figure it out as I go. Like, I think, as I mentioned, like, I'm a very risk averse person. I don't like to do things where there's a lot of the unknowns.
That's insane.
I mean, from an outsider's perspective, maybe it doesn't seem that way.
But, yeah.
You know, I worked at my job for 7 years. And, you know, for 5 of those years, I was running my business on, like, nights and weekends. Wow. So it was a very slow transition. And it was really just kind of on the heels of making it, and also just like kind of a cross-country relocation, that I finally felt like, okay, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it now. And if it works, great. And if not, hey, I'm a licensed landscape architect. I'm sure I can get a job somewhere.
You really could. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. So lots of safety nets involved, but luckily it worked out.
Wow. That's amazing. And you, I mean, you said, like, and that's why I'm like, oh my gosh, risk averse. But I really do think that I feel the same way too, is I'm really scared of risks. I'm really scared of trying something I've never done before. But, the word comes to mind, and it's not a real word, but it's a risk averse risk taker.
Yeah. You know, like, I love that.
You know, like, well, it's really four words mixed into one, but I don't know.
It's now a word.
Yeah, I love
that.
Yeah, yeah. Risk averse risk taker. Because, like,
you hit the nail on the head.
You dived into it.
Yeah.
You know,
you have to. Otherwise, you know, because there was definitely things I loved about being a landscape architect, but once I really, you know, finally came to the conclusion that it wasn't for me, you know, once you realize something's not right, you don't want to waste, you know, life is so short. You don't want to waste your time doing things that you don't love. And like, the fact that now every day I'm like excited to start working and like excited to check my emails, and like, it's like
so
really
crazy.
Small things, but I love it. And I'm just like so glad that I was able to find something that I love and pursue it.
Wow. So you were there as a landscape architect for where were you located?
I was in the Bay Area in California, so just north of San Francisco in a town called Mill Valley, and I was working for RHA Landscape Architects, which is a great firm. Love the company, love everyone there, and you know, I think because I love them so much, even when I started to have doubts, I was like, well, I just love it here, so I'll stay. And I think it was 7 years, so that's a long time.
That's a long time. Yeah. To be invested with a company and doing, and what kind of projects did you do like there?
Yeah. So the cool thing about RHAA is that they're kind of a mid-sized firm. So they're around like 30 or so people. So they're not big enough that they have multiple disciplines, but it's big enough that there's a huge variety in the types of work that we were doing. So we had a couple of different teams that would work on like campuses and, you know, streetscapes and things like that. And then our team was mostly focused on like park design, cemetery design, wastewater treatment plants, which was very not glamorous, but the fun one was national parks. And so,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. So that was definitely, you know, something that, you know, I loved working on. I love visiting national parks, and I got to work on Yosemite, Death Valley, Joshua Tree, Muir Woods, and you know, all of those, you know, especially as someone who loves the environment, it felt really good to be kind of getting to see these places and be part of their future.
That is amazing. So for national parks, like did you design something, or was that like, what did that look like for that? I'm just curious.
Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, of course it was different for every project. So Muir Woods is a national monument. So it's not technically a national park, but it was just, you know, 20 minutes from our office. And if you've ever been to San Francisco, it's like,
I have,
it's just like a place that it's got these massive redwood trees. It's really a magical place. And it has these incredible bridges that cross a little creek where the salmon swim up every spring. It's straight out of a fairy tale. And the bridges, you know, needed to be rehabbed. They needed to do a little bit of work to reroute the paths because they were naturalizing the stream for salmon, which was just like a really, I mean, also what? Seeing the salmon was like a magic moment in an already magical place. So it just felt, So to be able to be part of the project of like helping their ecosystem become better was just really nice. And it was really rewarding. So, you know, we worked, I was the project manager on that at the time. So we designed these new bridges with longer spans and figured out, you know, routes that we could eliminate removing any trees. And so it still hasn't been constructed because obviously COVID put things in a little bit of a weird situation with financing, but it was just really special to be so closely working on a project that like it was literally in our backyards and just a really magical, magical place.
I cannot even imagine being a part of something like that, where you get to actually walk at that place and enjoy that place all the time. It's in your backyard. It's so local. And the fact that you could say, I mean, I would imagine it's kind of similar to, I mean, it's design, you know, you have pride in saying that, hey, like I was a part of that, you know, just like you would have pride with like wearing, you know, someone wearing your earrings or like, you know, little things, like, it's just so neat.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and I think, you know, there was other projects too, like, I think it's under construction now, but we were working on the new Welcome Center at Yosemite National Park. And Yosemite was about 4 hours from us, but it was a place that I had gone camping myself like many, many times. And you know, it's especially nice when you can identify that there is an issue. For example, at Yosemite, their Welcome Center was kind of hidden and the wayfinding was always a little bit problematic. And so to know that you're going to be part of the solution is a really nice feeling. There's a lot that goes into national parks that it's a little bit more complicated, tons of red tape, just because there's so many different people involved. And it's of course so public. So like right in people's eyes. And so definitely a lot of challenges there, but like, even through the hard times, you're like, okay, I know this is going to be worth it. I love this park. I want it to be good.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Wow. So you were a part of a lot of national parks then, because I keep forgetting that like in California, there's just so much access it's just incredible. Like when I was there, we went to Muir Woods and it was like, like, this is right here.
It doesn't make any sense. to a huge city. It's very bizarre.
Yeah. That's why it's so magical, because it doesn't make sense. Like, it's just, it's like, how does this, but wow. So you were also a project manager too. So you're pretty involved in those things. And so that's a big position to have.
Yeah, that was the first project management role I had ever had. And I think it honestly came down to like budget issues. They were like, she's cheaper, we'll put her in charge.
No.
But honestly, like, it is a great learning experience.
Yeah.
And you know, to be thrown into something like that, where you, like, you know, you go from, you know, planting design to having to design a bridge and coordinate like all these different groups of engineers and all these different policymakers. And so it was a huge learning curve, but it was like such a great experience for me. And I think that particular experience has translated so well into like all the skills that I needed to run my own business now that I'm kind of down the line. So it's a lot of, a lot of stuff.
It is a lot of stuff. And I was actually thinking too, like the thought just popped into my mind of when you were saying like model making, where did you like make models for your firm, or like, because everyone knew that, hey, like Chelsea's the point person for this. Did you do stuff like that for the firm?
You know, there was only one project that we ever made a site model for. There was definitely a lot of 3D modeling. So I did a ton of SketchUp. And you know, a little bit of like Fusion when we started our office, eventually got a small makerspace with a laser cutter and a 3D printer, mostly just to kind of test out scale things.
Right.
And so I learned a little bit of Fusion 360 there, but for the most part, you know, it was very reliant on 3D models, which in that you know, situation makes complete sense because you're trying to change things very quickly. Right. And, you know, the times that we did make site models, it was mostly for fundraising type things. So, you know, one was a Japanese internment memorial that needed a lot of funding. And so we created the model so that they could bring it to different exhibits and kind of share it.
Wow.
But that was a kind of one-off thing. And then,
yeah.
So I only got to do it that one time.
Oh, well, hey, I mean, what I think is cool is that like the fact that you guys even have terrain over there and like that you can even create a site model here. It would just be like flat and then the beach. So
I mean, beach site model sounds pretty good, but I totally understand what you mean.
It's all right. That's why we have sea level rise hitting us so fast. It's just like we're zero right here. Yeah. But you know what? I mean, but it's cool. It's so, and I wish I had dabbled more into that, more into making site models, because it is a really, really great decision-making tool and like, and also experimenting and all that stuff. I mean, it's incredible. But yeah, so you had your miniature making business, which is Chelsea Makes and has always been Chelsea Makes, right?
Yes.
From day one.
From day one.
Did it start with a hamster? Was the hamster involved?
He was involved, but I will say the business was before him.
To give you a little
bit of background, I started.
I saw hamsters and I was like, oh, excuse me.
He's definitely involved and I'll get to him because he's a big talking point. But wow. I started, you know, I think like the real reason I got into it was I was starting to have doubts about my career and I knew I needed and you know, my husband and I, he was my just boyfriend then, but we moved from New York to California. And so we were in this entirely new place. I was working at this job and I was starting to have doubts about whether or not it was the right career for me. And so I just wanted to, you know, find people, some people that I could like relate to. And so I decided to take a woodworking class and I took a woodworking class and I made a table and I made a little like TV console. And Bay Area apartments are extremely, extremely small. So as soon as I made those two things, I was like, well, I guess that's the end of my woodworking career because I don't have room for anything else. The wood shop had a laser cutter and I was like, well, I remember that from school. So maybe I can tap into that and maybe I'll just like I'll design furniture and make it in miniature. And so I started doing that. And obviously it escalated quickly. So when I started making these miniature site models or miniature models, my husband said, you know, I think she needs a model for all of her miniatures. And so for my birthday a few years in, he adopted Martin the hamster, who very quickly became my like focus for all miniatures.
Oh my gosh, that is adorable. That is so sweet. Well,
he was such a good hamster, and there's a lot of photos of him because he was very food motivated, so I could kind of get him to stay in one place. I really knew nothing about taking care of hamsters, and I was like, well, I want to be a good pet parent. So I started looking it up, and it said online, you know, hamsters live longer lives if they're fulfilled and they're happy and they're well taken care of. And I was like, I am on it. So I made Martin all these miniature scenes of different countries so he could travel the world and be very fulfilled.
That is so precious. Oh my gosh. He traveled the world. What a full life.
He traveled the world. Yeah.
That's amazing.
He's a good man. Good man.
That's so sweet. So man, so you started this, like as large scale, large scale stuff, yeah. really. That's yeah. how it started. Okay. Totally. And then you shrunk it down into yes. tiny little things. So why did yeah. you do that? I'm curious.
Well, you know, I've made miniatures as a kid too. You know, like mm-hmm. I would sit down in my basement and I'd make stuff for my Barbies. And I think, you know, one of the reasons it's so appealing in general is because it doesn't ever really require all that much stuff. You don't need a lot of really fancy tools to get started. You don't need a lot of any material. And of course, they don't take up a lot of space. And even better, when you're a kid who like can't sit still and pay attention, you can finish a project really quickly. So it's kind of got that nice, like, wrap it up, let's get this yeah. done. And I think all of those factors kind of contribute to the fact that, you know, when you're living in a small space or when you're fresh out of college and you don't have a lot of extra money, you don't have like the finances to go buy big canvases and a lot of really mm. expensive paint and start, you know, you don't have tools to become, you don't have tools to start sculpting out of marble, you know, so you yeah. work with what you have. And I think yeah. what I had was a lot of scraps of material and a very limited amount of space to create mm. things. And, you know, the more I did it, the more I fell in love with it. And I think, you know, the reason actually you brought this up, now I'm totally jumping all over the place, I'm sorry, mm, but yeah, you know, no. you brought up the name of my company, which is Chelsea Makes. And the reason it's Chelsea Makes is because when I first started, I wanted just kind of a handle that would cover anything I made. I didn't really have a specialty at the time. I was making, you know, the furniture, and I was making, like, playing with things out of concrete and all sorts of random stuff. And I think, you know, the more I stuck with it, the more I like kind of continued, and I realized that there was like all these different mediums I wanted to try, and what better way to do it than in miniature, because you can mm. try them, but you don't have to invest in all of the big stuff in order to do that.
I love that.
It all landed under Chelsea Makes.
Wow. And that is a really smart way to think about it. I never thought about it that way, because at least for me and my own personality, like, I get very overwhelmed when it comes to model making. Yeah. Like, I know I can do it and I've done it before, but oh my gosh, like, I'm like, this is just too much. Like, I have to think about the scale. I have to think about the materials yeah. and all this stuff. And it just gets super overwhelming. Yeah. And on top of that, well, when I did it last time, it was like in school and you had to be on like a list and you had to, it was stressful.
Oh, yes. But
it wasn't, it
you're
just
getting,
wasn't
you're
fun.
Getting judged for it. So, or
you
not.
Are. You
for it.
So. Yeah, exactly. This is a whole different story.
A little bit of fun.
Yeah, exactly. But the fact that I never thought about like making small things and using that as like your form of experimentation, but then yeah. also like as a piece of art, because it can be usable. It's totally usable, but it's not Definitely. In the conventional way. So that's basically what art is, you know?
Yeah.
And so I absolutely love that. And I never thought of making miniature things and saying like, this is like the kind of like an easier way to kind of yeah. do something yeah. that is overwhelming, at least for me
Hopefully.
Personally. That's
yeah.
that's what I hear.
You got it. You got it. Exactly. You know, it's a way to kind of like, you know, when you're dealing with kind of like, if you have a whole room to decorate in your house and you have to just kind of like fill it quickly, like that's really overwhelming. But if someone says, hey, just go pick out a blanket, you're like, okay, I can pick out a blanket. You know, you yeah. just, if you just take a small chunk at a time, it's a lot more easy to digest it. And I think that for me, you know, I love miniatures just because they're adorable. And I don't know anyone who goes like yeah. miniatures, but like, you know, there's also something very practical about them in that, you know, you can take a slice and you can just work on this small thing. And then you have like, you can start from there.
I love that. I absolutely love that. I think that very method will help me actually pick out like what to do with my living room too, because
yeah.
it's empty still.
Pick one thing you really yeah. like and then go from there.
I love it though. But honestly, like, it's not even just the fact that like you make miniature things and that's part of like your design and everything. But at the same time, like, you make beautiful things, like beautifully crafted. Like, I saw like a mid-century like little coffee table that you made, or yeah. like a little futon, or like these things that were so challenging for me to get on the little X-Acto knife and all that. But it just looks like, it looks like a manufacturer of a tiny manufacturing company made it. You know, like it looks perfect.
Totally. I have a whole army of hamsters.
Makes sense.
Their little hands. Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, you know, I think for me, and you know, I think at least at this point, I didn't, for the first few years, I was cutting everything by hand, but now having these more precise tools, I have a laser cutter, I have a resin printer, and I think those tools really helped me kind of like refine my style. And then, in the beginning, but you know, I always say too, like, you know, just work with what you have. Like as a kid, I didn't have a laser cutter and a 3D printer. Obviously my miniatures were maybe not as refined, but there was still something very charming and like satisfying about the things I made from whatever I could find in the recycling bin.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I, again, like, I just don't like that, but that would make sense too. Is like, you're in there working every single little detail.
Yeah.
And of course your craft is going to be refined after doing this for how long has Chelsea Makes been around?
I think around 6 years. It's definitely shorter than my 7 year stint as a landscape architect. I'm going to say 6 years.
6 years. And that's blended in with the landscape, right?
There's a lot of overlap.
Wow. I did see, which we will talk about, I did see some overlap in one of the challenges, which I believe it was the first challenge in making it, where you made a little casita and you put the little plants. And I was like, oh, she's a landscape. It makes total sense.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you know, so we filmed making it. We filmed it like 2 years ago at this point, which is crazy to me. But you know, at the time I was working as full-time as a landscape architect. And when I got this opportunity to go, I was just had to be like, hey, do you mind if I take like maybe a whole month off of work? And, you know, we had to be very vague about the details. I wasn't allowed to like share what I was doing or any of my progress. And so they were kind of, I think like, that's really a testament to how great of a company they were. They, you know, they knew that I loved this. They knew that this was my hobby. They knew that, you know, if I had a craft show, they would all show up. And so they were more than supportive. They were just like, yeah, your job's going to be waiting when you get back and have a great time. Good luck. We hope you win.
Oh my gosh. What?
So that was really lucky. Yeah. They were really, really supportive.
And I'm going to do like a little bit of backtracking here.
I'm jumping all over the place.
No. That's okay. Because this question just popped up. Like, did you like have an inkling maybe when you were like, let's say like you graduated and with landscape architecture degree.
Yeah.
Did you kind of know that maybe this firm would be a supportive firm, or like, what kind of good indicators do you have that this firm was going to be supportive and a great firm to work for, you know?
That is a great question. I think this is going to sound crazy, but when I was looking, I was not one of those people that had a job lined up right when I left school. Like, I really didn't. I had to look pretty hard, and I applied to so many places. And one of the things that someone told me as I was looking for jobs is that you are interviewing, when you're in an interview, you are interviewing them just as much as they are interviewing you. Because that is the place you're going to be spending, you know, almost more time than the people at home that you're going to be spending time with. It's like the building that you're going to be like experiencing the bulk of your day in. Yeah. And so one of the things that I would do before I would go like ask for interviews or apply to jobs is I would just go to their website and I would look at the people's faces and I would like, do they seem like nice people? And I know that's judging a book by its cover, but you know, there's definitely firms that really pride themselves on being starchitects and like, you know, everything is very polished. And, you know, this firm was a little goofy and they were a little silly and they like to do things like have pumpkin carving contests. And I was like, that sounds like the type of people that I could spend the whole day with, you know, day after day.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love that. And and their projects, I would imagine too, right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly. Like they had such a nice diverse like range of projects, but for me it was definitely like I was guiding it just based on my gut. And when I got there and I did the interview, And I was, you know, able to ask them questions about what it was like to be there. And not to mention their office is just absolutely gorgeous. Like it has these huge windows with huge redwoods outside. So definitely a selling point as well. But 100%. I mean, it was just all those factors that I really felt comfortable there right away.
Wow. And then that paid off because they supported you fully, it sounds, and they sent you off into the world with no promises that you were going to come back, you know, like it's, who would have thought, but that's really nice to hear. You don't hear that every day.
Yeah. Wow. It was a really, I recommend it if anyone needs a job in San Francisco.
Yeah. All right. Well, put it down. So, I'm curious. So with making it or with, sorry, with Chelsea Makes, mm-hmm. It's so hard because there's like so many bits and pieces to that it's like, how did it, I guess, like basically how did it go from to going on to making it? I mean, did you have to do auditions? Like, what was that about?
Yeah. So I, at that point, when Making It came out, I immediately, I had been doing Chelsea Makes for a little while, and immediately people were sending me like, have you seen this? Have you heard of this show? And I was already a huge fan of Parks and Rec. So when season one of Making It came out, I was hooked immediately, you know, to see a show, a competition show that's like not about competition and is just so positive and warm, especially, you know, just like in the world today, there's not a lot of like happy, joyful, safe places. So to find that on television, like I rewatched season one over and over and over again. And then when season two was announced, I applied like right away. And when I wasn't selected, I really took it hard. It's so silly to take something like that hard because, you know, they're getting, you know, thousands of applicants and they don't know any of these people personally. Mm-hmm. So, but of course, you know, when you are like, I'm made for the show and you don't get it, it's just like, you know, it kind of throws everything off track.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so, you know, season three rolled around and I was like, I'm not going to apply. Like I already got my heart broken once. And then, you know, the more I thought about it, I was like, I think I could be persuaded to try again. And I'm so glad I did because it was, auditions started right before COVID hit and we were kind of like, you know, it was stop and go for such a long time. Would they have season three? Would they not? Like what was going to happen because of everything with COVID? And ultimately, you know, they finally got the green light and they announced the cast with like 3 days for us to get down to Los Angeles with all of our bags packed. So it was very little time to tell my job. And like, but you know, I think, I had tried to give them some hints that like something might be coming up and, you know, fortunately for me and fortunately for them, it was like a little bit of a quiet time. So they were able to let me go without too much issue.
Wow. Yeah. Oh my God. 3 days.
Yeah. It was very short notice. I mean, build up to that was months, but like when they finally decided, it was like, okay, it's go time.
Wow. And was it like an email or did they like call you or?
There was so many phone calls. It was a phone call. Yeah.
I feel like that makes a difference though, because like if you're waiting for an email, it's like you have no choice but to open the email, you know, but it's if it's a phone call and you're the voicemail, you know, it's like a whole different thing.
Yes. But, yeah. And you know, they were like, you know, at one point they were like, oh, you're in like the top like potential 20 candidates. You can celebrate. And I was like, I'm not celebrating until you tell me I'm coming down because that is messed up.
I feel more anxiety now. Thank you.
Yes, I know. I was refreshing my email and my like checking my phone like probably every 30 seconds for the first 6 months of COVID waiting for things to happen.
I cannot imagine the buildup and the oh my gosh, but the fact that you risk averted risk taker. There you go. Yes, you did it.
That's it. You know, something I meant to touch on before too is that like one of the reasons that miniatures have been so big for me is that I've been using them as sort of like a vision board. And so like now, you know, I'll create like furniture. Like when I first started too, I created furniture that I would like to have, but didn't have room for. And one of the things I did was after season two, what I didn't get selected, I made a miniature model of making it barn. And I had it on my desk at work, and I would just like kind of look at it. You know, I was always there, and I was just always looking at it. And I think I like manifested it, because if you just like create it in miniature and like focus on it and you put all your energy yeah. into it, like it's going to happen.
Put it in your pocket every day, yeah. you know, take it out.
Yeah. And I don't think necessarily there was like actual magic involved, but I think right. just like, you know, putting it out there and like saying like, I am going to do this and I'm going to do whatever it takes to get there. It was enough to finally like give me the inspiration to just keep at it and keep trying.
And the fact that you made the barn before you ever even got on the show, I mean, that to yeah. me is mind blowing. Like, what is it? Foreshadowing. Like, it's yeah. crazy. It's insane. Like what you've now, like you're looking back on now, it's insane.
Yeah. And it's pretty crazy. And I kind of forgot about that until now. So that's pretty amazing.
That is pretty amazing. I'm gonna go make myself like a mansion or something.
Yes,
in miniature, whatever. No, I'm just kidding. But that's so know. Cool. You never know. You never know. Exactly. Never know. I love it. But that's incredible that you really, really, you did it. You stuck it out, and you still even getting rejected. I think ultimately, like that's the feeling that you get, is that like, oh, like you feel rejected because it's the perfect opportunity. It's perfect.
Yeah.
But yeah. it wasn't the time. And so the perfect yep. time was season 3. Yeah. And I wonder like what, I mean, I'm pretty sure like if you had even still gone on season 2, you have had all the opportunities you've had, but maybe this gave you time to like even still yeah, work yeah. on Chelsea Makes, you know, and like still build it up.
Totally. Yeah. You know, and it's so, when you're disappointed, it is so hard to see that there might be a silver lining. But, you know, I came away from making it season 3 with some of my like absolute best friends. We talk, you know, every single day. And I think, you know, the year in between season 2 and season 3, I grew so much as an wow. artist, because I had started this series where I was, you know, reaching out to artists, learning about their work, and then recreating it in miniature. And I think that really gave me wow. such a great, you know, sampling of different types of skills, which a lot of them actually ended up serving me really well on making it. So I think it worked out.
That's incredible. So you were like, what was your first major project for Chelsea Makes? Like, because I know you do a lot of branding.
Yeah, I do a lot of branding, which I really like, because it's nice to have it's always nice to have a challenge. And you know, I think in the very beginning, when I started doing things that were more commercial based, I launched a dollhouse kit, a collection of dollhouse kits, because I loved making miniatures, but it wasn't really, yeah. you know, in order to make them and sell them, I would have had to charge so much just because they're just very time intensive. Yeah. But I made these kits so that people could make it themselves. And I reached out to a local stop motion artist who I wanted to hire to produce some stop motion videos of my dollhouses. And she just happened to be like, oh, you make miniatures? I actually need some miniature sets. And that really like, yeah. So that photographer, definitely worth checking out. Her name is Colette Perry, or Coco Perry. And wow. her work is amazing. And I think because of my friendship with her, like, I really think that was kind of the final catalyst to get me to do Chelsea Makes full time, because she showed me that there was career paths that weren't on the normal, you know, the normal 9-to-5. She showed me that there was ways to make money doing something you love that like didn't seem like an actual possibility, but here she was making it work. And then she was just kind of pulling me in with her.
So, that is incredible.
Yeah. It makes so that's where like a lot of the branded work came from. Yeah.
I see. Okay. I feel like there is some sort of secret sauce to it all, because like when you look at it, I'm like, wow, that is amazing. How did that happen? I mean, but yeah. it all goes so well. I mean, miniature and stop motion.
Totally.
Basically, stop motion is like when I think of even claymation or something, you know, right. like you're making exactly. miniature worlds. So
yeah. But to go back to, you know, to go back to that point earlier, like when you're passionate about something and you keep putting it out there, you know, that's the magic sauce. If you do something and then you hide it away in your closet and no one ever sees it, then it'll be great for you, but you're not going to be able to like shout it from the rooftops. But here I was saying, hey, I want to show more people my miniature work. And she was like, great, I can help you do that. And it just kind of worked out. So the more people that know what you're doing, the more people that are seeing how excited you are about what you're doing, the more job, the more work, the more all the great stuff that's going to come your way.
You just brought what the lost thought, the lost,
the
thought,
lost that, thought,
the lost thought has arrived, it arrived at the train station and full you circle. Brought it the circle. Yeah. Full circle. I cannot believe that you just said that, because I have been telling that to people, is that, you honestly like talk about what you do and talk about what you love, because people really do, like, the right people appreciate yes. that. They appreciate it, and like someone will see you and someone yes. will encourage you and bolster you, and like that's, I mean, I like the work that I do, and you know, even though it's like landscape architecture, even in the podcast, like
yeah,
telling people, actually just tell somebody, you know, like what you do and people are going to appreciate it, but it doesn't hit until the right person hears it.
Right person. Yes.
And then all of a sudden things go poof, and it just makes sense.
Totally. Yes, exactly. It's, you know, you can't please, this is a hard concept for me, but you can't please everyone, you know, not everyone is yep. gonna. And so there are a lot of times when, you know, things aren't going the way you want and you think, well, maybe I should just give up. But that's when you have to double down, because yep. you have to get through that patch until, like, you just have to keep putting it out there no matter what, no matter if you think it's not worth, like, it's absolutely worth your time to keep doing what you like mm-hmm. and to keep telling people about it.
Yeah. And to put in all of the work that you can, because even like someone asked me, oh, where do you see the podcast in 5 years? I was like, I don't know. But what I do know is that I have a small goal, and that small goal is to make this amazing, to make it national, and to just keep trying, but you have to keep going. So I'm like, I don't know, like 5 years, that sounds like a lot of time to me. So who knows? I might stop it and do something else, you know, but right. I mean, right now I'm full charge. So
yeah. Good for you.
There you go. See, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyone
That's
else?
Amazing.
Like, and students, like the students who are listening, or maybe even not, like designers or whoever's listening, like just know that if you have something, a passion that you like, here at Chelsea's a perfect example, is that tell somebody what you do, go full charge, and who knows where it's going to go.
Definitely.
But it honestly, like, and so now I think we've arrived to the point now where you are at making it. And so mm-hmm. like, I don't even know where to start with that, because I feel like that's just such a big thing to tackle. But yeah. So you got the call, and so you moved to, well, you're already in the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm, yep.
Where
drove
do you
down
go?
To LA.
Drove down to LA. Okay. So yep. what yeah. happened from there?
So yeah. So I mean, I'm gonna assume that there's some listeners who have not seen it, because to be fair, it's not a very popular show. But you know, basically it should be. Yeah. I mean, Nick and Amy are enough to seal it, in my opinion.
Seriously.
But basically, yeah, every episode, there's usually 10 makers each season, and the makers are given a challenge. So, you know, it could be something like create a food that represents your personality, or, you know, create a family portrait out of whatever material. And then, you know, the makers are given a certain amount of hours, usually between three and 10, to create this challenge. And then they're judged. And each episode, usually someone gets sent home, until you get to the final episode where there is a master craft challenge. And one person is crowned the winner of the prize, which is a job well done, and $100,000.
Oh, $100,000.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good chunk of change.
Yeah, so, sure is.
yeah. So, you know, I got to making it, and was honestly just like terrified, because as someone who has always struggled with self-doubt, even though I had gotten myself there, I still kept saying, you know, did they make a mistake? Like, did they like let me in by accident? You know, it's just easy to be really hard on yourself. But, you know, the weeks went on, and I did challenge after challenge. And, you know, when other people went home, you know, I kept saying to myself, like, I don't want to go home, because I don't want to be a failure. Like, I want to make it to the end. I don't want to be a failure. And then when other people would leave, I would be like, that's crazy. They're so talented. Why did they get sent home? And then I would, you know, I would have to think to myself, like, you don't think of them as a failure. So why would you be a failure if you
went
home? Mm-hmm. And so when I finally got to that feeling, which took quite a few episodes, but at that point I kind of had like a whole gear switch where I felt like, you know what? It doesn't really matter if I make it any further. Like I want to have fun. I want to like use tools that I wouldn't have access to and helpers that I wouldn't have access to and just like, you know, make big things, which I don't normally get to do. And so it was just really fun to kind of push myself, you know, as someone who makes tiny things, to make all these big things and like a time constraint. And so it was really just such a beautiful experience to kind of be able to stretch yourself out like that.
Yeah. And too, like, I was also thinking, because you're used to making miniature things, what was the most challenging of all of the challenges?
Ooh. You know, there were a number of challenges this season, which were new to kind of the format of the show, which were called like mega crafts, which was instead of a small craft and a larger craft, it was just like one huge craft that spanned the entire episode. And I think for me, like, I always approached those as, you know, just like a big picture idea. I think that probably comes from landscape architecture. Like, you know, you want to make sure that like globally the whole thing works and like fits in with where it is. But really I should have been hyper focusing on those details. And so those were always, those huge challenges were always a very, very big challenge for me.
Yeah, for sure. I would imagine. I mean, having to do big, big things and then doing it with time constraint, like you said. And then also I was going to ask too, this is a little bit out of the loop here, but was it kind of intimidating having like big, huge stars in there, like asking you questions and talking to you and all of that while you're like trying to make stuff? What was that like?
I mean, yes, definitely. Fortunately, I mean, fortunately/unfortunately, they were not there all the time. You know, they would come in the beginning and then, you know, if we were working for 8 hours, they'd come around again. They'd chat with each of us for 30 minutes. They'd be there for a few hours. But, you know, the very first episode, I was the first person they came up to talk to. And whenever I rewatch that scene, I'm always like, that is a different person. Like, I sound petrified and I don't sound like myself.
Really?
But I was just so like, oh my God, Nick and Amy are standing within like 4 feet of me.
That's
and
insane.
So I kind of like had a little moment there. And,
yeah.
And, you know, if you watch like further on in the season, there's like another moment where like, you know, they're trying to like figure out how big this bench is. And they're like, oh yeah, okay, just come sit down next to me. And I have this moment where I realize like I'm sitting next to Amy Poehler and I just completely lose my mind. And
oh my God.
That was like one of the best moments of my life.
Oh.
Aside from my wedding was great, but that
of
was
course.
Like
pretty good, just, pretty up there.
Yeah, they are really just like the way they are on Parks
I was gonna
Rec,
ask
so,
you that
yeah
I was
they really
ask you
are
that. Wow.
Like a dialed down version a little bit, but like, you know, Nick is the same like stoic, funny, you know, like woodsman that he is. And Amy is like the bubbly, happy, like joyful piece of sunshine that she
She's
is.
Here for
so
fun. Was, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So it was
that
really,
is
like,
incredible.
Really nice.
Yeah. I remember when I saw the ad for the show coming out, like making it, I was like, what the heck? This is the most perfect thing I've ever seen in my life. Of all the people that are starting a show about making things, it would be them. I'm like, I never, why didn't I ever make the connection in my mind? But it's honestly the best.
It's just so nice. It's like, you know, because they were just had such great camaraderie on Parks and Rec. And then just to know that exists off camera too is really, really cool.
Yeah. And also like, I mean, that you even had like great camaraderie with all the other makers there too. I mean, everyone, not only was everyone like so incredibly talented, but that you guys all seem to get along super well, which is awesome.
Yeah. I think, you know, I think, you know, there's like, it's kind of a Jess would say like a shared trauma. Like, you know, you're going through this extremely high stress situation and, you know, on top of that, like it was peak COVID. So we were quarantining in our rooms. We didn't leave our rooms. Wow. We weren't on set. You know, we were getting our noses swabbed every other day. And so it was just like a very high stress. I mean, ultimately so much fun. But excitement, and I think, yeah. And then just to find people who kind of like share your brain, when you're in a room with a bunch of landscape architects and you're kind of like, ah, these are my people. We can talk about sidewalk scoring and plants.
Yeah.
And you try to do that with your friends from home. They're like, what are you talking about? So just to find people who really understand it, wow. It was just really, really wonderful. And I'm just like so grateful that I get to call them my friends for the rest of my life.
That is incredible. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Like you said, shared stress. That kind of also happens too with school because
studio for sure.
Yeah. In studio, like I had a 5-year degree as well, like a 5-year program, and I did architecture for the first 2 years and then landscape the following 3 years.
Yeah.
But I mean, like you're in there and you're sleeping there, you're eating there, you invite family over sometimes because you need help and like all the things.
Totally.
Yeah. So you make lifelong friends. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Trauma bonding.
Trauma bonding. It totally works,
Yeah.
Lifelong friends.
It works,
friends.
It's stressful, but you get something good out of it.
Exactly.
The other side, so
now, like after making it and after, I mean, you were a runner up, right? Like you were almost
I went into it with the mindset like I told myself I wasn't going to win. I think I wanted to kind of protect myself by saying that, yeah. But when I realized that I was going to be in the finale, like that was just amazing because that is the one challenge that repeats itself year after year, which is to transform a standard shed into something special. And like, because it's the one challenge that repeats every year, it's the only one you really know about. And so I had all these sketches in my notebook prior to getting on the show that were like, what would I do if I got to do a shed hack? And, ultimately got to create a really beautiful place to like almost a glamping inspired nap shack, which was super just special. It was inspired by Yosemite and inspired by my honeymoon in Iceland. And it was just like, just a place where when the cameras were not rolling, all the other makers gathered in my shed and we all just kind of like had this like nice quiet moment where like even though there's like 50 cameras on the other side of the door, like we were just like, oh, this is so peaceful. And so I think to me that said that it was designed right and that it made people feel the way I wanted them to feel, which was safe and protected.
Wow. Oh, that hit right here.
Yeah, it was a good, I wish I got really to keep that. I didn't get to keep like anything I made, but I wish I could have got the whole shed back with me.
Oh man, what a bummer. Yeah. Well, I mean, at least, I mean, you could try to remake it again. I don't know.
Yes.
Where would it go?
Yes,
in your
one day.
Yeah. A miniature,
More space, but I will do it someday.
Yeah. Yeah. That, oh man. I mean, cause it's something, especially like even making a memento of that little moment, like what a special moment to experience with everybody. And even from the show, like, it's like a memento. You can always remind yourself of that moment.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that, we weren't allowed to have phones on set or anything, but one of the makers snuck in a Polaroid. And so I do have like one image of that, like moment. And that is just like so special.
Wow. Oh, good. Okay. Images. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And I was going to say too, like, were there any other like really special kind of like groundbreaking or shocking moments that you experienced there? Just kind of like, whoa, I'm here. I'm actually here.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, they happened like every single day. I mean, every single day I was just like, oh my gosh, like I'm finally here after like years of dreaming for this moment. And at one point on the show, they asked me, they said, oh, like, you're a landscape architect. Like, do you think you want to do that forever? And, I was still employed at the time as a landscape architect. And so of course I was just like, oh yeah, I definitely want to do this forever. But, in my head at that time, I was going like, this was the thing that showed me that like, I am capable of following my passion. And so that was really that was really when I started thinking, okay, how am I going to be able to do this full time? Like, I need to figure out a plan to make this my life because I was just having way too much fun.
Wow. I mean, not everyone gets to say that. It's like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I'm sure my job is probably like, oh, we shouldn't have let her go and she would have stayed.
Yeah.
But you know what? Like, I think they knew too, that like my heart wasn't in it. And you want people to do what they're passionate about, not what you feel they're obligated to do.
So. Yeah, absolutely. And so then after making it, so did you end up going back, or did you just realize like, okay, this is something I gotta let go of so I can start this new thing?
Yeah, I went back. I went back pretty much like a day or two after filming ended, which was a very abrupt Whoa. Adjustment. Whoa. And you know, I think I probably would have stayed, but my husband and I, you know, my niece was about to be born, and you know, we had spent a year due to COVID away from our families, not being able to see anyone because all of our families were on the East Coast. And so Wow. we ultimately decided that we were going to move, and you know, moving meant, you know, we were going to live with my parents, which we still are, while we looked Yeah. for a house, which we're getting closer to, which is finally, Wow. which is nice.
Wow. Congrats.
Thanks. Oh. But you know, living with my parents and like, you know, kind of saving up that money, it was the thing I felt I needed as the risk averse risk taker to kind Yeah. of make that jump. So we knew we'd be saving a little bit of money by living at home, and that would kind of carry us through any sort of, you know, imbalances that happened as I made the transition. So it Wow. kind of all worked out at the same time. It was about 6 months after making it wrapped.
Wow. Okay. So that sounds like a lot of transitions from like
Yes.
transitioning to miniatures, then, you know, going to making it, and then after that moving again. And it's just, wow. Yeah. So, but you're still going strong. You're still going strong Yeah. with Chelsea Makes. I love Yeah, it. All the things I mean, you've been making. And
thank you. Yeah, you know, it's, I think, again, like, you know, the more you put out there, the more chances there are for people to see your work and be as excited as you are. So
absolutely.
The more I put out, the more that comes back, which is great.
I love that. And I was actually going to take a little moment to show what, I know all the audio listeners can't see this, so whenever we get to do it on YouTube some point, but look at this little caboodle. Oh my God. It's so small. Oh, I was really hoping that the screen doesn't. But oh,
there we go.
This right here shocks me. Absolutely shocks me. 100%. I opened it and I'm like, there's a whole organizer in here.
Yeah. I mean, that's what caboodles are all about.
They are. So guys, like, go on Chelsea Makes. Purchase yourself one. It will spark joy. It really will.
That's so I mean, good. Thank you.
I'm going to put it on my, I was going to say I want to put it on my desk, but I actually don't want to put it on my desk. I'm going to put it in my bedroom where I can see it.
Aww,
because
nice.
Honestly, it's like, it's one of those things where it really did. Like when I opened it, I didn't expect like to feel like so happy that I was like, it's a tiny caboodle.
Yeah, I mean,
I have one at my house. Like I have a bigger one, but I don't have this.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay, great. I'm so glad, because a lot of people were like, what is a caboodle? And I was like,
but I have to be clear, I only have yeah. I have a clear one. I don't have Ooh. One that's like this 50s like style. But
I love it.
So when I saw this, I was like, oh my God, like the fact that it's tiny just makes it all the more special.
Yeah. I mean, there's just something good about tiny things. It's undeniable.
There is. I can't explain it, but it literally does something to you.
Yeah.
So now, like I saw even too, like just recently, I know, thank you so much, by the way, just thank you so much for giving me your time. And it's already been,
oh my
like,
gosh. I'm sorry I'm talking so much, but I'm having
no,
fun.
No, I want you to talk all day. Are you kidding me?
Put it down if you need to.
No, there's not going to be a single thing cut out here. I know that for a fact. Like this is a wonderful interview. You're a great guest. I learned so much from you. And Same. Yeah. Thank you so much. Yeah. I feel honored. So I really enjoyed it. And I was going to ask you too, was that,
yeah.
I noticed that you do have you're on Domestika now, like you do yeah. a class. Can you share a little bit about that? I think that would be an awesome resource for people.
Totally. Yeah. I had just recently completed, a Domestika course, which if you're not familiar is an online platform with really easy to follow modules, and it's all for creative arts. So every type of art, digital, graphic, painting, you know, textiles, you name it, you can find a course on Domestika about it. And so my course is, of course, making miniatures. We create an entire Wow. miniature 12 scale living room, teach you lots of different techniques. And so it's a really Wow. fun way for me to, it was fun for me to get in front of the camera again and just kind of really share what I was passionate about.
You look like such a natural. Guys, I watched the video and I was like, oh my gosh, like she's been doing this for like 10 years or something. It was so natural. I love it. And it's really exciting that you're teaching people like the techniques and stuff. Like there's the secret sauce like for that.
Yes. Secret sauce is sharing what you love and teaching people about it. So I'm glad that I was able to get to do that.
Yeah. Well, I hope I get to do Domestika tour, like the course and learn from that because it really does seem like something really like doable, at least, right? Because at times it can be very daunting, doable. But but thank
it's
you
broken
so
up
much.
Into bite-sized pieces so.
yes
thank you. It was nice to kind of reflect because obviously it's been a year since I left landscape architecture, but I've got no bad blood, so I love the profession, I love the firm. It just wasn't for me, so I think that people, don't be afraid that if it doesn't feel right to explore something new, but that's for any profession. Maybe someone else out there is making miniatures and dreaming of being a landscape architect.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, this is very true. And I think we don't have the permission. I don't think we just don't feel the permission to be able to pursue something like that, whatever doubt or someone laughing in your face or whatever it may be. I just don't think that it's said enough. So, and the fact that, that landscape architecture was the kind of like, I'm a very visual person. So it was funny when I was thinking about like kind of when you were talking, I thought about landscape architecture as sort of like a little fairy and you were like the car and then you were kind of, it was the fairy taking you off into the next island. So it's not, it's not forever, but it's, it's something to, it's something, it got you from your point A to point B.
Exactly. I wouldn't be who I am if I wasn't also a landscape architect.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Chelsea. I really, really enjoyed our talk and
thank you for having me.
Listen. Yes. Yeah. Anytime at all.
Oh, well, best of luck. I can't wait to listen to more episodes as they come out.
Thank you so much. I hope that you guys liked today's episode. Don't forget to leave us a rating and a review. Also, give us a follow on Instagram at The Greenside Pod and check out our new website at thegreensidepodcast.com. Stay tuned for our next Side Talks episode where we discuss our perspectives of this month's interview from the sidelines. This episode was edited by Patricia Fabregas. As always, keep hugging trees and stay on the green side.